Comics, yeah.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hello, Paul, and happy Father's Day, breeder.
Well, thank you very much. Did you call me a breeder?
You made product.
I have content, is that what you're saying?
You've created content.
I've created content. Yes, I created another little person who's not a little person anymore, actually.
You invented your own character, and you developed that character throughout a very long story arc.
Yeah, exactly. I was in a close partnership with another creator. Yes, we've worked well together over the years. But thank you. Father's Day, I get to do whatever I want, and today I want to talk about ridiculous powered superheroes from the 1950s.
Woo!
Woohoo! Actually, early.
Whee! Unbridled enthusiasm.
Yes. So today on the program, we will be discussing The Legion of Superheroes, Archives, Volume 1, a collection of Silver Age goodness from DC Comics. But before we do, there's been some interesting things going on at DC Comics recently. People stepping down, changing positions. I guess the most prominent of these would be Geoff Johns stepping down as DC Entertainment President and Chief Creative Officer and transitioning into writing and producing positions. Do you know more about that, Brian?
Well, it all seems a bit amorphous, doesn't it? It sounds like a demotion, but I don't think it really is. I don't have the financials in front of me.
Yeah, it seems like definitely a lateral move.
It's a lateral move. I think Johns has always been more creative than, say, editorial or in a sort of a power position. And I think it's been noticed with DC when he doesn't like love or hate what Geoff Johns does. And I actually enjoy Geoff Johns comics. I don't know if he's the greatest writer to ever come down the pike, but I think when I read his stuff, he has some very great classic runs on certain characters. Some of his work is okay, but at the end of the day, he has a love for writing that I think probably he might have missed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm not trying to put words in his mouth or put feelings or what have you in his mouth. We don't know. Part of this big announcement is he's going to be taking on a lot more writing chores, including Shazam.
Yeah, and Green Lantern Corps, which will be interesting.
Right. And he's going to have a stronger hand in, I think, the TV content, the DC TV website thing that we've talked about a couple podcasts ago.
The streaming service that they're going to.
Right. And one of the titles that he is apparently being strongly associated with is Doom Patrol, which excites me.
Yeah, my take on Johns has always been, I think he's a very competent writer. I don't think there's anything spectacular about him, but he has an enthusiasm for the characters and for the medium that just sort of, that makes up for a lot of his, what he lacks in, spectacular writing, he makes up for with just his enthusiasm for
what he genuinely likes the characters he's writing.
Yes. And that comes through.
And it's not something you always get with writers. You often get writers who you feel are going through the motions. It's a gig, it's a job. Oh, today I'm writing Machine Man, or today I'm writing Quicksilver, or whoever, fill in the blank. And the writer is like, I don't really care about this character, but it's a paycheck.
Right. And then, and then the other extreme is writers who actively hate the characters they're writing and are just trying to tear them down.
Which I believe we covered several podcasts ago.
Yes. But, but let's move on from that. So Johns will be replaced by Jim Lee.
Right. Well, it's a reshuffling of Jim Lee and Dan Didio, it looks like, with Diane Nelson gone.
Yes.
Under circumstances that aren't clear and are really, at the end of the day, nobody's damn business.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's stepping down to take a extended leave of absence, which, I don't know. You could read into that whatever you want.
Sure.
I personally am just going to take it for what it is. So she's been working really hard for the last decade, and she wants a break and to do something else.
Which is fine. And again, if the reasons are different, it's sort of like, you know, who cares?
Right. Well, you know,
she's stepping aside, and that is her right. Or if it's not her right and it's something deeper than that, then that's between her and her bosses, or you know, her and her family, or who have you.
Yeah, regardless. I mean, Diane Nelson, I mean, she oversaw the launch of the New 52 and its transition into Rebirth. And granted, New 52 had a rocky start and not everything was great. But overall,
it was terrible.
Yeah, but overall, it was a really bold move. You know, it was a gamble, and it paid off in the end. It had some interesting results, and Rebirth is astounding. I mean, some of the best comics I've read in years. So
for the most part, yeah. But some of that, like, a lot of people will credit Geoff Johns with that.
You know what? Diane Nelson needs to be applauded for her work. What she's done. I'm really impressed with what DC is doing these days, and a lot of that is due to her leadership. So, you know, credit where credit's due.
Right. But at the same time, it's like Geoff Johns being a lot of the Rebirth is Geoff Johns' baby, whereas Jim Lee and Dan Didio are sort of behind the new age of heroes, which I think has basically stalled in outside of the Terrifics. It's kind of a lot of those are dead in the water.
So there's the Terrifics and then the not Terrifics.
Not so Terrifics.
Yeah. So I see, you know, so with Jim Lee replacing Geoff Johns, I assume that means that Lee will start as chief creative officer and then have someone else finish for him.
Three issues in, he will he will run out of, yeah, three issues in of his tenure, he will run out of.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I think I saw a meme somewhere along those lines as well out there. But one could say that it's at least accurate.
But in addition to Geoff Johns having his new, you know, position in DC, he started a new company called Mad Ghost Productions. And right. I don't know much about that other than it has an imprint called Killing Zone.
Right. It's aligned with DC, so it's as near as I could tell, and people can correct us as more information comes out. As near as I can tell, it is the Mad Ghost is going to be DC. It's going to be DC properties with his own stamp on it.
So that's,
is that different from what you've read, or
no? I have not heard much about this other than what it's called, and it's interesting though. I mean, I find it interesting of how that's going to work, having DC properties with Geoff Johns' individual take on them, I suppose.
Well, yeah, that's what Killing Zone, which I think you mentioned before we started, that's a rather unfortunate. It's unfortunate even without a history attached to it. It sounds stupid to begin with.
Yeah.
But then when you attach...
The logo is, if for people who don't know, it's KZ kind of on an angle, and it's... historically, that's what was put on a concentration camp. And so it's an unfortunate choice of a logo.
I'm wondering if as more information comes out, I'm assuming that they did not know or proper branding research hadn't been done. So I'm wondering if that will change down the line. It's just an unfortunate name, even when you don't take that into account, because if you're trying to appeal to kids and you're like doing a line of superheroes called Killing Zone,
yeah.
You know, this isn't Vertigo, this isn't Image, this isn't Boundless.
Well, is it meant to be for mature audiences, kind of like a Marvel Max or something? Or is
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like alternate history stuff, which DC is doing a lot of extra imprints right now.
Yeah, it seems like.
Or they're announcing a lot of different imprints right now. And I'm curious to see how those fare going forward.
Yeah.
I appreciate that they're trying to change things up a little bit and offer alternatives to just the DC universe proper. But there is the possibility of oversaturation.
Yeah, because they're doing Vertigo's going through a whole, you know, rebranding, new look kind of a thing.
Yeah, and some of those titles are weird.
Yeah, but you know what?
Some of that Vertigo stuff, I'm reading the description, and I was like, you know what? It's not 1991 anymore.
But that doesn't that sound like? Isn't that doesn't Killing Zone sound like it would? It's, you know, from the heart of the 90s.
Yes. Yeah, then, written by Peter Milligan, probably.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then Black Label is also.
Yeah, the Black Label on DC sounds a lot like the Black Crown stuff that Shelley Bond, formerly of Vertigo, is now doing with IDW. And some of those titles are great. And also featuring Peter Milligan, who I just referenced a few minutes ago.
Hmm. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where this all goes to and how it all pans out. Right now, I'm kind of confused as to the direction that they're heading in.
Yeah, and you've got the boutique label with Brian Michael Bendis. You know, Who else is going to, at this point, who else is going to demand a boutique label? Is Tom King going to want a boutique label? Is Scott Snyder going to want a boutique label?
Who knows?
Or imprints?
Well, the thing is, at least DC has directions that they're intending to go in, as opposed to Marvel, who, what are they doing?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Now, as far as Marvel's concerned, they did just change their everyone at the top, and they have a new editor-in-chief. So, So we will see where everything goes. That hasn't really panned out yet. But right now, goodness, it just seems like they're running out of ideas.
But they were Paul, they're the house of ideas.
The house is on a shaky foundation.
It's. I appreciate some of what Marvel is doing, and the amount of Marvel titles I get is probably at its lowest at this point that it's been in a long time. I mean, I still get Doctor Strange. Yeah. I still get Daredevil. I will always get Daredevil. I'm getting the Avengers now because Jason Aaron is on it. So, okay, Jason Aaron, Avengers, sure. I'm going to pick that up. I'm going to get the new Fantastic Four. I just pre-ordered it, so that's going to happen. But, you know, then there's the Star Wars stuff, and then I'm kind of like, well, then what else am I getting from Marvel? Yeah.
Well, you know what? Honestly, what I'm getting from Marvel is actually at its lowest point ever as well.
And you're a Marvel guy.
And I'm a Marvel guy. I'm getting, for the first time, I've mentioned this before on the show, that for the first time in my entire life, I'm getting more DC books than I am Marvel books.
Which is crazy.
I know, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
But even at their lowest point, I mean, even now, Marvel's putting out some good stuff. It's not a lot, but they're still putting out some good stuff. And then the same thing happened. DC was at a low point at one point. But they they were still putting out some good things. So it ebbs and flows. I'm hoping Marvel gets it together and does something better than as Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, I would think, Paul, that as Guardians of the Galaxy would be right up your alley.
Yeah, so I did mention this.
The title.
I did mention this earlier before we started recording. While I am a fan of the pun, you got it. You know, you can't base an entire book on a pun. You have to actually have something to back it up. So
yeah. Tell that to Keith Giffen.
No, it just seems like everyone was sitting around the writer's room and someone made a joke and they said, "Ooh, let's run with that."
Who can we put on as Guardians of the Galaxy? And for all we know, it could be a really fun title.
Yeah, you know what? It might be, but whew. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, it's, we all do, like at the end of the day, like you were saying, you're buying more DC than Marvel. And I think at this point, I'm probably buying more Image than I am DC. And I'm buying more DC than I am Marvel a bunch of other smaller presses mixed in. I mean, you know, I'm.
But you're buying more Marvel than Boom.
Yeah, probably. I'm buying more Marvel than Dynamite.
Okay. I don't think I've ever bought a Valiant.
Yeah, I think I always felt like I missed the boat on Valiant because I was like, oh, Valiant's back. Who cares? And then so 1 year later, after they've got all these titles under their belt, suddenly everybody's like, oh, Valiant's doing really good stuff. And I'm like, well, it's too goddamn late now.
Yeah. It's never too late, Brian. It's never too late. Just jump in
randomly.
Yes, jump in with your, you know,
Well, previews is always so nice when they tell you jumping on point.
So anyway, you know, there's a lot of new and interesting things happening. So it's a good time to be a comics fan, I think.
Comics, yeah.
All right.
That was unintelligible there. Comics, yeah.
That's going to be our tagline from here on. Comics, yeah.
Comics, yeah.
All right, on that note, let's take a quick break and then come back with some Legion of Superheroes.
Sounds fun.
...229 different characters spanning the galaxies of the Legion of Superheroes, presented across 7 comic book issues. A new miniseries as part of the Who's Who podcast. To handle this many characters, the Irredeemable Shag is bringing in a ringer, or maybe we should call them Flight Ringers.
Who's Who in the Legion of
Superheroes. Who's Who in the Legion of
Superheroes. Who's Who in the Legion of Superheroes.
The Legion of Superheroes.
Who's Who in the Legion of Superheroes.
The Legion of Superbloggers team up to present Who's Who in the Legion of Superheroes, a 3-episode miniseries in 2017, part of the Who's Who podcast on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Long live the Legion.
And we're back. Cast yourselves back, dear listeners, to a more innocent time, to a world of boys and girls, lads and gals, the Legion of Superheroes. Take it away, Brian.
Thank you, Paul. The Legion of Superheroes has a long and complicated history, suffering at times from too many reboots, too many characters, writers who didn't quite get them, and a convoluted timeline. But when the stars align, it can be a comic that dazzles, has become a fan favorite with the various iterations leading to spirited debate amongst fans. Created by Otto Binder and Al Plastino for Adventure Comics number 247 in 1958, as a group of super friends from the future for Superboy to find commonality and friendship, they proved to be popular enough to feature in further issues of Adventure Comics, Action Comics, Superboy, and Superman, each time adding new members and interacting with not just Superboy, but Supergirl and Superman as well. Eventually, they became the main feature of Adventure Comics before eventually landing their own eponymous series. For our purposes today, I wanted to talk about the Silver Age origins of the Legion, as collected in the Legion of Superheroes Archive, Volume 1, which features the first adventures of the Legion from 1958 through 1963. Many notable and iconic stories occurred during this time period, including the introduction of Mon-El, the Legion of Supervillains, and the Legion of Superpets. We also have the death of a Legionnaire, a relatively new and prescient idea that has played out throughout comics. And of course, we get the origins of the two greatest Legionnaires of all time, Matter Eater Lad and Bouncing Boy. Paul, I recommended this. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is, you know, this is just a lot of fun to read.
Yes.
It's definitely a different time. So you have to put yourself in that mindset as you read it. But if you just allow yourself to embrace the weirdness and the silliness, it's just a joy to read. There are issues, but overall, it's just a lot of fun.
I mean, I think it's very indicative of that time period. We are coming right in before Marvel and Marvel revolutionizing the how comic stories are told. So we are in with this run of Legion of Superheroes. We are in the tell don't show era of comics, but it's also way pre deconstructionist, where you have 20 pages of comics in which more happens than most modern comic writers can do in 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is, of course, at a time when, you know, the comic book code was in full effect. And
yes.
And creators just, they were stymied by a lot of things. And sometimes, all the times, the stories tended to skew a bit younger.
Right. And every villain had to be the very worst of all villains.
Yeah. And you know, bad guys couldn't win. There could be no nuance. Bad guys had to be bad guys. Good guys had to be good guys.
Right.
That's an episode unto itself, just the comic book code. But you're right. you know, Marvel in a couple of years after what we're reading today will revolutionize how comics are told, you know. And you can see, if you juxtapose these two things, you can see how radical, you know, Fantastic Four was as opposed to the Legion of Superheroes.
But for their time, some of what was happening in the Legion of Superheroes was pretty out there, even by the conventions at the time.
Oh, well, yeah, there's just crazy stuff happening in this.
I mean, a lot of it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Oh, no.
So let's clarify right off the bat that I think these comics are a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, and that's what they're there for. That is what they're created for. They're there for fun. And there are many things that happen in these comics that make no sense whatsoever, have no scientific value at all.
Absolutely not.
That even from a storytelling standpoint, they don't make a whole lot of sense.
It's almost like they were just throwing anything they could at the wall.
And right.
It stuck.
Yeah. But at the same time, they are vastly entertaining.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I
smiled and chuckled through this entire collection.
So
it among groans as well.
Right. There's plenty of groans to be had, but we get a lot of fanboys nowadays who one of the common complaints is to bitch and moan and whine about comics aren't like when I was growing up, everything was better back in the day. And that is a tiresome complaint. But at the same time, I get the complaint in that what we grew up with is what we are most attracted to. And so to me, growing up in like the 70s, early 80s, a lot of those comics are what appeal to me in terms of how stories are told and how they're presented. But at the same time, during that time period, I was buying like old comics whenever I could find them for a price that me as a kid could afford, like at yard sales or at comic book stores where they were crappy conditions of comics from the 60s that didn't have any value in terms of introducing new characters or what have you, or they were just thrown into like nickel bins or dime bins. Now I guess you'd call them quarter bins, what have you. Mm-hmm. So I would end up with a huge, the trips I would get to take to the comic book store, I would end up with these huge stacks of like old comics, of which were not valuable then and probably are not valuable now, but partly because of condition, partly because of just what they are. But, you know, I'd be reading these and they were so different even from the comics I was reading in the late 70s, early 80s. And that, even at that point, created a weird nostalgia in me for a time that I did not live through. So I became nostalgic for that which I did not have an anchor to be nostalgic for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way. There's an aesthetic, a sci-fi aesthetic from the 1950s. You
know, right.
You see it in the B movies and in these comic books where it's just, you know, everything's just sort of curves and chrome and weird jumpsuit costumes. And there's something about that is really appealing. It's silly. It's ridiculous. But it's really endearing as well. There's a naive hope to these comics, if that makes sense.
You're right. Well, sure. It's as we referenced, it's the good versus evil in very black and white terms. And you weren't conflicted as to who you were going to root for. You didn't have there's no anti-heroes in comics.
I don't even think that was a concept yet.
No.
Do you want to talk about some of the specifics?
Sure. Well, I think so many things happen in these comics. Let's talk about
some of the characters.
Okay.
It should be stated that each of these superheroes only has one power.
And if you weren't sure about that, they would tell you over and over and over again in each comic.
Superboy is kind of just unbelievable. You know, he's just amazed by that. They only have one power.
Yeah. it's also the league was formed basically as a Superman fan club.
So it should be stated that the League of Superheroes is way in the future.
Right. 1,000 years in the future. So the League of Superheroes is 1,000 years in the future. And apparently, like, it was 1,000 years from the date that the comic was published.
And apparently, gender roles didn't really change much in 1,000 years.
No. She's pretty good for a girl.
Oh, my God. There is that introduction to one of the Supergirl stories that, you know, on the splash page, it says, even though she's a mere girl, she still has the powers of Superman. It's like, oh, that is just awful.
We laugh.
But, you know, Supergirl does, she cooks well, and she's a matchmaker.
Yes, oh, she's a matchmaker. Yeah, that is an important plot point in one of the comics in this collection.
Yeah, those are
she's very concerned. She's very concerned that Superman is not married.
Well, you know, we could do some pretty interesting readings because he and Mon-El have a relationship.
There's much love between Superboy and Mon-El.
And then there's a little self-hate. You know, there's all kinds of readings we could go into for this.
Well, yes.
But let's, first of all, so now we're talking about them being way in the future. Let's talk about the time travel rules or lack thereof.
Oh, there are no time travel rules, Paul.
Yeah, they're a bit undefined. And the application of time travel is what we like to call willy-nilly.
Well, there's clearly no butterfly to step on.
No.
But it's one of the great things is like, so Superboy can just travel through time at will. With Superman, Superboy, because Superman does feature in some of these, but mostly it's Superboy.
And Supergirl as well, right, back and forth through time.
Well, if she takes, right, because there's that great part where if Supergirl takes the Legion's time travel bubble, which may be the name of it, time travel bubble, because the naming of things is also great. But, you know, then she ages. There's a whole story which she was joining the Legion.
Well, she was going to be, she had to go to the future.
Right.
She had to go to the future and perform a super task in order to join the Legion. But
in a story almost identical to the one 3 issues before that, like almost identical in terms of actual scenes.
Oh, no, it's not almost. It is. It's the same thing.
They repeated the same story twice.
Yeah, with the exception of it ends with her coming across red kryptonite, which ages her.
Right.
And of course, Legion of Superheroes, she could only be a teenager. Oh, wait, actually, there's a hyphen. It's a teenager. Hyphens were really big at this time. They were hyphenating everything.
Everything was hyphenated.
Things just didn't need to be hyphenated. Superheroes was actually hyphenated.
But that carried through Spider-Man, because apparently Spider-Man is not Spider-Man, he's Spider-Dash-Man.
Spider-Dash-Man, exactly. And actually, in the early Fantastic Four stories, Johnny Storm was a teen-ager as well. But yeah, so Supergirl, she finds some, or accidentally passes some red kryptonite that happens to be at the Earth's core. it makes no sense.
Because where else would red kryptonite be but at the Earth's core?
Yeah, just hanging out there, for no reason. And she ages, so she can't be a member of the Legion.
To be a member of the Legion, you have to be a teenager.
Teenager. We also should mention that every time the Legion of Superheroes shows up in the past, they just sort of screw with Superboy and Supergirl.
Yeah. Most of the stories here either involve them screwing with Superboy or Supergirl, like messing with them.
Yeah.
Or somebody in the Legion is like suspicious.
Exactly.
Like they're basically the most incompetent group of superheroes out there, because they're constantly being fooled by some villain who is making it seem like one of their members is betraying them.
And let's just call it out. The Legion of Superheroes, they're kind of dicks.
Yes.
They just kind of are. They're sort of just, they're not very nice. And when they do their recruiting interviews, whenever they don't want someone, they're just mean.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, like, you don't belong here. Get out. Yeah.
You're out of here. And if someone doesn't have a superpower, if they have science, if they're using science instead of having a superpower, they're out.
Yeah, they're just cheaters.
And then that individual has committed the greatest sin imaginable, and that is to not have superpowers, but just to have a brain.
I know. That's just, you know, Iron Man.
Except would, Brainiac 5, what is his superpower?
Well, he's
smart.
Well, I think his superpower is not being a villain like his great-great-grandfather. Because that's mentioned a lot.
A lot. And he's green. Which Supergirl finds foxy, apparently.
Well, it's not easy being green.
It's not.
I can tell you that.
But... It's, but yeah, we wandered off a bit, but back to your like time travel thing. It's throughout all of these issues, and this, I think it's 20 some odd issues that are collected in this particular. It's the first 20 some issues of you know, from 58 to 63 of all of their appearances. But yes, you know, throughout each one, there's always time. Well, you have to time travel because they're 1,000 years in the future. But it's like Supergirl, Superboy, and Superman, they just, they're like, oh, I got to go see my pals in the Legion. I'm just going to get up and fly really fast.
And boom, they're there.
And then they're there.
And apparently there's no butterfly effect at all.
Right.
Because they mentioned that, you know, we've looked over the past records, and because certain events happened, that's how we formed our league.
Right.
But they go back to change history a lot.
All the time.
Yeah. So the timeline is not, it's not sacred in any way.
Yeah. I don't think they didn't give a shit about the timeline. No. There was no concern about that. They hadn't read Bradbury yet.
It's almost as if they were just making this stuff up as they went along. Okay. So I gotta admit, robot technology in the 1950s, pretty good.
Pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing stuff.
Superboy and Supergirl both had like life.
Well, I was going to say life model decoys, but that's
life model decoys. I wanted to go there too. Yeah, but they were life model decoys. And here's teenagers. I don't know where Superboy gets all of his genius from. You know, so he's from Krypton, but he's also 14, yeah. Right? So he doesn't have any education other than Earth education. So how is it in small? Does Smallville have the greatest public education that has ever existed?
I don't know. I'm not sure he's getting it from Pa Kent.
No, because we should mention that Ma and Pa Kent are idiots in these particular iterations. Well, that's nice, son.
Yeah.
Dad, I just meant Mon-El, who might be my brother. Oh, well, that's lovely.
Yes.
Can you light my cigar for me?
And how many times in these issues did they just turn on Superboy immediately? Oh, I don't even like you anymore.
Right? Yeah.
I'm gonna adopt this other superhero as my favorite.
Ooh, there's a new superhero in town from the Legion of Superheroes. Well, that superhero's way better than Superboy, who's been, you know, shoveling the school for the homeless or the orphans, you know, with his giant shovel.
Yeah, Smallville, very fickle.
Very fickle. And again, you know, it's the fact that both Lex Luthor and Superboy are of advanced intellect, that they can build all these scientific pieces of machinery that nobody else in the world has been able to create.
Yeah. Lex Luthor builds a remote-controlled robot on another planet or on an asteroid.
Right.
That's pretty impressive stuff for a teenager.
Yeah. What is as impressive about more impressive than Superboy building a life model decoy, or Supergirl creating a life model decoy? I mean, maybe she got the plans from Superboy because she came later.
Well, she is a mere girl.
You know, she yes.
But there is one thing though that yes, they are creating all these great inventions, but you have to understand that the health and safety regulations at theme parks are incredibly poor.
Well, yeah, I mean, my God. Every issue. Look, it's I have, speaking of Smallville having the best education in the history of the world, they're also the most accident prone.
I know. Every ride breaks down. Wild animals just running loose in the town.
It's nonstop chaos in this tiny little town in Kansas.
If Superboy,
which seems to be the epicenter of everything that's bad in the world.
And it doesn't get better because Smallville, 1,000 years in the future, is still having the same problems.
Right. You know, even though it's a large, universal city.
OSHA's just not on target.
But the other thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say maybe we should talk about the actual Legion of Superheroes. Because there are some interesting characters.
Here's the other. So before we talk about the character, we have to talk about how they get to become members of the Legion. And I have some weird timing issues with this. So at first, there can only be one a year.
Right.
You have to have one superpower, and they only induct one a year. So there is a finite amount of time in which you're a teenager. So at some point, you know, they're up to like 20 Legionnaires.
Yeah. So
the original Legionnaires are still teenagers, yeah. But somehow they have had 20 years of being teenagers in which to induct the other 17. Let's say Lightning Lad and Saturn Boy, Phantom Girl, Lightning Lad.
They're sort of the key.
Right. But yet, you know, they keep inducting new people, yet they never age a day.
It is, maybe it's that whole time travel thing. They're going back and forth, and they just sort of stay the same. And maybe they could actually just jump ahead a year, have a new member, jump ahead a year, get a new member.
Well, maybe they just, yeah. Or maybe they just, every time they travel back in time to see Superboy, they lose a year. So they start, like, they're 17, and then when they come back, they're 16. And then they're 16, and they travel back to see Superboy again, and then they're 15.
I'll buy it.
You know, crazier explanations have been made in comics.
Yep. I like I said, I'm on board. I'll buy that.
But they keep so back to your point. So they keep adding new superheroes. And some of them are, without a doubt, some of the greatest characters we have ever imagined, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, we've got Phantom Girl. We've got Triplicate Girl. We've got Invisible Kid, Sun Boy, Colossal Boy, Cosmic Boy, Shrinking Violet, which is a weird character because Shrinking Violet, I mean, there's no lass or girl there. What's going on there?
Yep, there's. I don't understand it myself, but goodness gracious. And Shrinking Violet, that's an odd name.
It is.
The Shrinking Violet is you know, someone who's really shy and doesn't assert themselves.
Right.
So sort of not what you want in a superhero?
Not superhero material. You know, yeah. You know, I don't believe her name is Violet. I think it's like Salu Digby or something like that. Which was also exciting because, you know, I'm like, Digby, oh, you know, is there some history here?
There are some legitimate superheroes with decent powers.
Mm-hmm.
Lightning Boy, able to produce lightning. That's actually kind of a legit superpower. However, Sun Boy,
Triplicate Girl, you know, there's three of them.
Yeah, that could cause that would be. There's some, you could have some interesting evenings with Triplicate Girl. Is what I'm saying.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is a family show.
Okay, but Sun Boy, he's able to shine like the sun.
Yep. Well, I think he uses that to create like a force that he shoots out. Because at the end of the day, if you're a superhero, the most important power you could have is to shoot stuff out.
To shoot stuff out, absolutely.
Yeah. If you're going to be a superhero, you got to shoot stuff.
Well, that's not necessarily true. You could eat things.
You could.
And I have of to course, say.
Who we have not talked about are the two best characters ever. You're leading up to one of them.
Yes. Yeah, so matter-eating. Is it matter-eating boy or
matter-eater lad?
Matter-eater lad.
I mean, which is a perfect name because it's not absorbing lad or mineral lad. No, it is matter-eater lad.
He literally eats things.
He literally eats matter. So the name is, his name is what he does.
You know, that's not uncommon with superheroes.
Right.
But the fact that when they say, well, what good would you be on our team? And he says, well, if we're ever in jail, I could eat the bars.
Eat our way out. But you know what? That gets him membership. You know, because they're so remarkably stupid in some ways, you can see them getting locked up a lot.
That is true. I could see that.
You know,
or being duped by a supervillain. And then, of course, I actually have a fondness for Bouncing Boy.
Bouncing Boy is my favorite character, comic book character of all time. His name is Chuck Tane, and one could make their own jokes about his real name, but his power is literally he bounces.
Yes. He can inflate himself like a ball and bounce.
Yep.
And you know what? When he deflates, he's actually still a little pudgy. So still, you know.
But that's okay.
No, I think that's very good. That was a good representation.
I'm a little pudgy when I deflate as well.
I don't know what to say about that.
To be fair with Bouncy Boy, let's be honest. As ridiculous as he is as a character, even then there was enough self-awareness, I think, in the writers. They did not treat him in a serious manner. And I don't want to say that he was never treated in a serious manner, because I feel like there is somewhere in the history of the Legion where he was treated. Some writer at some point, I've read a lot of Legion in my life. I feel like I know a decent amount of Legion of Superheroes, but I would be lying if I said I've read every arc of Legion of Superheroes, because there's a lot of it out there. And there's a lot to remember, particularly with all the reboots and all of the other things. So I don't want to say that a writer has not treated Bouncing Boy in a serious manner. And if someone knows of or remembers a particular story arc where he was treated in a more serious manner, by all means, let us know, because I would like to either read or reread if I've already read it. I would like to be reminded of that, because I think that would be really interesting, because I think there are things you could do with that character. But there's no attempt to treat him in a serious manner in this.
No,
which is ridiculous as everything is, even the writers realize, and it's mostly Otto Binder, but even they realize, they're like, this is just a stupid character.
But he's actually given a little heroic arc in his, I want to say his origin story. He gets to prove his worth a little bit. He's the kind of character who, you know, someone like Grant Morrison would have a field day with. And
oh, yeah.
I would love to see him, you know, like, save the World Series or something. We are out of all the balls. Don't worry, Bouncing Boy is here.
I've got this covered. I will race from my rather strange-looking clubhouse. Oh, yeah, Superhero Clubhouse. Their clubhouse is called Superhero Clubhouse.
And it's not called, rocket. Like, Secret Lair or something.
It's a rocket planted in the Earth. It's not even big enough to fit Bouncing Boy.
It looks like an unexploded bomb.
Yes.
And then the inside is a TARDIS.
Right, yeah. There's all this extra room that's never explained. You know, and that's fine if it's other dimensional, but they don't try to say it's other dimensional. It's just this round thing that one person with one power could barely fit inside, and suddenly that's their clubhouse.
Yeah. I love how they
superhero clubhouse,
and they all have to sit around the table with a name tag that describes what their power is,
right?
As if, you know, oh, I forget, what do you do?
Because they can't remember each other's names either, apparently. Because yes, you know, it's like, I'm Sun Boy, I'm Cosmic Boy. Well, we've only been members for 3 years, so I can't remember who's who.
Oh, there should be a shout out talking about ridiculous powers. There's Antenna Boy, or Antenna Boy, who has the big ears that can pick up any radio signal throughout time.
Oh, right, but he can't figure out how to work it.
Exactly. Oh, boy. I mean, is this, were the writers just having a good time? Or were they trying to be serious with this?
I think they were having a good time. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, remember, like, the style of writing was at that. They're keeping with the style of writing at the time. And a lot of it is, you get a lot of exposition. And I think I said early on, there's a lot of tell, don't show, where all these things happen, and then you have 4 pages of exposition explaining why what happened wasn't really what happened and why and whatnot.
There always seemed to be a rug pull at the end.
Yeah, but that is in keeping with the style of comics that were being written at the time, not just with DC, but with all the other comics publishers. Remember, they were writing at the time for kids.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier, you know, about the storyline skewing to a very young audience.
Right.
And these are obviously written for your elementary school age kids.
So I think the writers, who were not unintelligent people, but they, you know, they were writing to their audience in some ways. But, you know, they do sneak in some stuff here and there that maybe has some more mature themes and some more adult themes, but you kind of have to look for it.
Yes. I mean, and that, as you mentioned in the introduction, the death of Lightning Lad was fairly significant. That's a much more mature storyline. I mean, with consequences.
It had consequences, and it was not resolved for a while, because this was before they, this was just when they were starting to get like a regular appearance monthly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, these issues were, you know, you have to understand that there are months between.
Right, yeah, these 20 issues or so took place over 5 or 6 years. This was, they were originally intended just to be kind of a one-off for Superboy to find some pals in the future, and they proved to be so popular that they kept bringing them back. And what I think is actually interesting in them doing that is, here's where I think it shows where the writers kind of knew what they were doing. Every issue introduces a new character. That had to be semi-planned out or thought about. So instead of just using the same 3 or 4 characters that were originally introduced, they carried this out over like a 5 or 6 year period of introducing new characters. And all of them became sort of the classic Legion of Superheroes characters.
Mm-hmm.
But they slow rolled them out, whether because of the delay in publishing in terms of not every issue of Adventure Comics or Action Comics or what have you had a Legion of Superheroes. But each one, each issue that featured Legion of Superheroes built upon what had happened before.
I mean,
which is kind of crazy for that time period.
Yeah, and there was, you know, as much as
we're not that they weren't doing, not that other comics weren't doing that at the time period, but that was not, you know, the standard.
Yeah, as much as we're giving it grief, they did have continuity. I mean, then they built upon that continuity.
There are parts of this that are still in continuity to this day. The Mon-El series, we haven't talked about Mon-El yet.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that real briefly.
Okay.
Mon-El comes to Earth. He's a Kryptonian. Or no, he's not a Kryptonian.
They think he's a Kryptonian.
And yeah, so he...
Superboy, Clark Kent, Kal-El thinks he's his brother because of some weird stuff that they spend 5 pages at the end explaining.
Yes, but of course, along the way, they begin to suspect him of being a spy or a plant or
right,
something.
Because some things with his powers aren't consistent with Superboy's.
Exactly. So Superboy plans this elaborate hoax where he paints lead balls green and tells him it's kryptonite. Mon-El collapses because he's not vulnerable to kryptonite, but he is vulnerable to
Daxamite. Right. He's a Daxamite who is actually lead is his poison. Lead is his kryptonite.
So he is actually lead poisoned so badly that he has to be sent to the Phantom Zone.
And it's important to note that while he's dying, he is able to go for several pages explaining his origin to Superboy.
Well, you know, on my deathbed, I would like to explain my origin story as well.
But in order to save him, yes, so Superboy has to send him to the Phantom Zone to freeze him in time.
But also throws him in there with dozens of supervillains who want to kill him.
But they can't because they're in the Phantom Zone, so they're not corporeal or yeah. Corporeal.
Corporeal.
Corporeal. Corporeal.
Corporeal. I stayed there once.
That's a beautiful place.
It's a beautiful island just off the coast. Yeah. So anyway, it needs to be pointed out that Superboy, it's all his fault.
Right. Because he's, you know, you were saying the Legion are dicks. Superboy's kind of a dick too.
Yeah.
Hey, Lana Lang, he's a complete dick to Lana Lang. He's a dick to Lex Luthor too. It's no wonder Lex Luthor wants to kill him constantly.
Everybody is they're just not nice people.
No.
The only one I like is the mermaid girl.
Yeah. Yeah, she seems nice, and her friend or her brother who has a crush on Supergirl seems nice. They seem nice. I bet they're a lot of fun at parties.
There is one storyline where...
Should we finish Mon-El?
Oh, let's finish Mon-El. Okay.
So I think it should be pointed out. So Mon-El gets put in the Phantom Zone, And at the end of this collection, and part of what makes this collection kind of important is that Monel is eventually freed towards the very end. They come up with a cure for him. And of course, Monel becomes an extremely important character in the DC universe going forward. And so this is the series that introduces him, gives him his origin. And a lot of that origin has stood.
Yeah. You know, and he's still important to this day. I mean, he's a character on the Supergirl TV show. Yeah.
Right. And if and when they ever bring back the Legion of Superheroes, as written by Jonathan Hickman, if I say it enough times, it's going to happen. But if and when they bring back the Legion of Superheroes, I would imagine that he would certainly be a part of that. But this is an important origin story that happened in basically what we would consider one-off comics in the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, which is, that's very interesting. It's something this, I want to say frivolous, maybe that's not the right word, but something as silly and seemingly one-off as this can actually introduce something that has lasted and stood the test of time.
Right.
There is one storyline that just, the logistics of it, I just want to know. So it's very convoluted, but Sun Boy gets injured. And there's an operation. There's like a little healing device that's put in his ankle.
And right.
But it turns out that there's a little tiny man inside a capsule stuck in his ankle that is controlling him and making him making him act villainous.
Yes, there's a man in my ankle. Well, he's the man in his ankle is the traitor, because he's the little man in his ankle is what's. So it's not Sun Boy who's the traitor. He doesn't even know there's right. Sun Boy does not know there's a little man in his ankle.
Yes.
Who is reporting all of the Legion's activities.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's just transmitting all of the Legion's activities. How? All right, so he's just a guy in a tiny little capsule.
In somebody's ankle.
Yeah. How does he eat? Where does he go to the bathroom? What's up with this guy?
We don't know. This is an alien life form. We don't know, like, what, how they eat. We don't know, like, how they deal with sustenance or disposal of said sustenance.
Yeah.
So we don't know. You know, if the little man in the ankle may not need to eat. You know, it's...
Well, regardless, he had to pull the short straw for that particular assignment.
Well, he volunteered. I mean, how exciting would that be? You get to, like, live in somebody's ankle and, report back all the activities of the Legion. You're a hero to your kind.
Yeah. But, you have to admit that guy's a heel.
Ooh.
So where do we go from here, Brian?
Well, I mean, I think... there's lots to talk about. I mean, there's so many great sort of little things in the Legion. And we are talking about it as if we're kind of mocking it, which we are, because there are things that with modern sensibility, things are a little ridiculous. But at the same time, it's a hell of a lot of fun to read. I mean, you get things like, at some point in here, we had the brain globes of Rambat, which are just giant floating brains. And anybody who's listened to this before, if you put giant brains like outside of a body, you just have floating brains, I'm happy. I love floating brains. I can't get enough of disembodied brains. So this has disembodied brains. So, they're the brain globes of Rambat. You have a paracat, which is a mix of a parakeet and a tiger, as what, like, it's got the face of a parakeet and the body of a tiger or a cat. There's stuff like that throughout this whole thing. You have the television trouble finder, you have the future scope recorder, all this kind of, poorly named but sort of fun, scientific aspects that we're really keeping in the time and sort of the fantastical nature of what people were willing to imagine. Yeah. And I think that the Legion of Superheroes has it. They became something so much more, and it's a shame the amount of reboots and sort of convoluted history that has followed them since then, because I think the concept of the Legion of Superheroes is great. And I really, really wanted... We've talked about a lot of more contemporary comics. I think the oldest comic before this we talked about was The Tomb of Dracula.
Yeah.
And
but that's still fairly modern.
Recent as compared.
Yeah.
But I think that the Legion of Superheroes represents that. That's the great part about the Silver Age of comics, which I really hope we can talk about a little bit more going forward as well, in that it's everything is wide-eyed.
Yeah.
And there's way more innocence at that time than we have now. We're all cynical. We're all cynical about our comics. And when you read something like the first 20 issues or however many you want to count of, say, the Legion of Superheroes or a lot of other comics that came out at that time, are they silly? Yeah. Are they kind of stupid in some ways? Yes. Are they a lot of fun with a hell of a lot of imagination? Yes.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, there is a naivete to these stories that's like I said in the beginning, it's just endearing.
Yeah. And not even in a condescending way. It's just endearing in like a good way. Comics should be good. And these are good comics that everything that we enjoy now is built upon.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's good that we can read our modern adult comics from Image or DC or Marvel, and they're all serious and everything is proven and everything makes sense, and we talk about, and those are great. I love modern comics. I love comics. Otherwise we wouldn't be doing this. I love all stages of comics and I love the modern comics, but so I'm not the person who thinks everything was better back in the day, but I think things were different back in the day, and that doesn't have to be bad either. You can have both.
I mean, we sat
Sorry,
here.
I'm soapboxing a little bit.
No, that, you know, I agree with you. And this, you know, there's a nostalgia factor to this. That's
right.
We were kind of making fun of it and mocking this a bit because it's easy to do
right
today.
There's silly stuff in it, and it's okay to laugh at that.
But at the same time, you know, this is a bit of history, and you can see what has come from this. You can see where Marvel evolved from this kind of storytelling. You can see where DC, you know, changed and morphed. Something like Justice League International owes a big debt to this.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You know, even though that's a modern comic and it has a, you know, some adult
right, thing. The Giffen to Maddie's.
Yeah. Exactly. But you know, you can see a direct line from something from this to Justice League International, and a lot of these old comics. I mean, they inspired the modern comic book writers. You know, this is what they grew up
with. There are some writers out there who still adhere very strongly. Grant Morrison is one.
Jeff Johns.
Jeff Johns. Yeah.
Yeah, you can go on and on. I mean, there's some, you know, even to a certain extent, Alan Moore.
When I read through these, like, as I was, and I, of course, I had read these back in the past, and I was, as I was reading these comics several times, the one thing I always had as I was reading them was I enjoyed myself and I had a lot of fun reading them. And even when I was laughing at things, I was laughing because in a positive way.
Yep. Me too. I was reading through this and I was shaking my head and saying how silly it was, but I was eagerly anticipating the next edition. So yeah. So this is just, they're fun to read. You may cringe a little bit at some of the phrasing and some of the situations. But overall, it is innocent, and it's indicative of a time when people were kind of boxed in to a certain mindset, and they were trying to do things, trying to expand it.
Yeah. Okay.
So I recommend it.
I recommend it.
All right.
It's yet another episode where we both agree.
That's shocking.
Yes. Well, as compared to last episode.
Well, if you just listened to me, we wouldn't disagree.
Well, we're both strong proponents of Legion of Superheroes and the entire history. If you can get through all the reboots that happened in later years, it's certainly a rich history that is worth investigating, and this is where it starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And Silver Age comics it's a little bit harder to read if you're used to, you know, the way modern comics are written. They're a bit wordy. There's a whole bunch of stuff crammed into just a couple of panels. But I actually like that style. And yeah. And I find it, like I said, very endearing.
And no deconstruction.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, so that's Legion of Superheroes. I think we both give it an enthusiastic thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, do you have a recommendation for next time?
I do. Surprisingly. So my recommendation for next time will be another attempt at a kind of a tie-in with the release of The Incredibles 2 in theaters. And the usual hot take on that franchise is that it's the best Fantastic Four ever made, Fantastic Four film ever made. So I'm going to recommend a Fantastic Four story.
It sounds excellent.
Specifically, Fantastic Four by Mark Waid and Mike Wieringo. I could be pronouncing that incredibly wrong, but it's the Ultimate Collection Book 2, and it covers issues 67 through 70 and 500 to 502, because who cares about numbering?
Numbering's dumb.
But I wanted to do I wanted to do Book 2. Book 1 is actually very good as well, but Book 2 has Doctor Doom and a lot of action, and I just wanted to do that one. I put a lot of thought into it, so let's go straight to Book 2. So that's, again, Fantastic Four by Mark Waid and Mike Wieringo, Ultimate Collection, Book 2.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fantastic.
Indeed. It's a thing to read. Okay, so that's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Of course, always, we love your feedback. So send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com, or hit us up at Twitter at CollectedEdPod. That's Collected ED Pod. Or, you know, semaphore flag. That'll work.
Semaphore flag is where it's at. Yeah. The kids are mad for the semaphore flags.
So until next time, everybody, thanks for listening and keep reading comics.
Be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at @CollectedEdPod. That's Collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Oh!